This episode of Howler Radio is brought to you by Roughneck Scarves. They offer custom soccer scarves for any level, as well as individual scarves of your favorite club. Roughneck is the official scarf provider to the MLS, USL, and dozens of other leagues and clubs around the world. All Howler Radio listeners receive an exclusive discount on their orders by using promo code Howler. Visit roughneckscarves.com for more information. Better service, better designs, better scarves.
Howler Radio, the podcast.
It's Howler Radio. I'm George Qureshi. We got the idea for this episode when a reporter was standing on a training field and he had that familiar feeling. You know, you see somebody and you can't quite place them, but you know them from somewhere.
Hello.
All right, we're rolling.
The reporter in question is Robert Andrew Powell. He writes for the magazine. You've heard him on Howler Radio. He had gone over to Florida International University from his home in Miami to watch the U.S. men's national team train. This was last year, before the World Cup qualifier against Jamaica.
And I was just there to watch the team, you know, because I'm a big fan. And while I'm there, I kept noticing that everyone kept coming up to this one guy on the sidelines, this guy I'd never seen before. And yet, like I said, he looked vaguely familiar. You know, it was people like Clint Dempsey coming up to him and shaking his hand, and all the coaches were shaking his hand and smiling. And eventually I had to ask someone who it was, and they said it was
Kenny Arena, the son of Bruce Arena. You've probably heard of him. He used to coach the U.S. national team. Now he's with the L.A. Galaxy. He's won the MLS Cup 4 times. Anyway, as soon as Robert realized who he was looking at, everything started to make sense.
And he was fit, but he walked with his belly forward, kind of like an ice-breaking ship. And, I mean, he looked just like his father. And that explained something. It was that practice I was at was the first time the men's national team had ever practiced at Florida International University. They usually practice at the school up closer to Fort Lauderdale. And it turned out that Kenny Arena had just been hired as the head coach at FIU.
In this episode of Howler Radio, we examine the old adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And we ask if this holds true in soccer. Do family connections really make life easier, or can they be a burden when you're the offspring of a star striker? Paul Dalglish, son of legendary Liverpool forward Kenny, answers these questions and more. We'll also look at what growing up in the game means for a new generation of U.S. soccer players. And finally, Alan Black, who you will remember from previous episodes for his wonderful screeds against Clyde Football Club. Well, he comes back to talk more about Clyde Football Club, specifically that most sacred of family bonding rituals, the trip to see your first match. Now, I should mention right at the top that I, too, am someone who has benefited from a parent working in soccer. My dad played soccer. Growing up in England, he came over to the U.S. for college, won the Herman Award, and then he was the first pick in the 1975 draft of the North American Soccer League. He was chosen by the Tampa Bay Rowdies and has lived in Tampa ever since. As I grew up, he and then some of his former teammates were my coaches, Steve Weggerly, brother of Roy, and then Perry Vanderbeck. And I have to say that his work in soccer, especially at the World Cup in 94 and then in Major League Soccer for the Tampa Bay Mutiny, definitely made it easier for me to start Howler. Spreading the word when we were just starting out, getting interviews, just a lot of little opportunities that existed because he already knew people in this world. So in my case, having a father who played soccer has really helped, and you'd think that's the way it would generally play out, right? I mean, why wouldn't it? Anyway, that's the thought that occurred to Robert when he was watching Kenny Arena, a young, relatively inexperienced coach hobnobbing with the stars of U.S. soccer. So Robert approached the head coach, Jürgen Klinsmann, to ask if he agreed that it could only be a good thing to have a father in the business.
I don't necessarily think it's an advantage. You know, I think it is a responsibility because people look even closer at him because of his dad, you know, because of the very successful career of his dad, you know, and what he did for American soccer and still doing that on the highest level. I think for him, Here and there, it's even more difficult because he has to double prove it because he carries that last name.
So I thought that was interesting. This idea that, yeah, it helps to get your foot in the door, but following after a famous family member can make it really tough to be truly successful, or at least to be viewed by others as a true success. Many of you will know Paul Dalglish from his time in MLS. He was a part of the Houston Dynamo team that won MLS Cup in 2006, and now he's an assistant coach at Real Salt Lake. But chances are that even more of you, many more of you, will know his father, Kenny Dalglish. Kenny is perhaps best known for his stint at Liverpool, where, as a player, he won 6 league titles and 3 European Cups. He also led the team to 3 league titles as a manager. I caught up with Paul and spoke to him about what it was like being the son of King Kenny, a man practically deified by Liverpool fans, not to mention those of Celtic and Scotland, too.
Probing forward again, and Dalglish has made space for himself. And tried to curl it, and does! A great moment for a master craftsman. It's his 300th goal in senior club football for Celtic and Liverpool. And if anyone could find a way through a mass defence, it's Kenny Dalglish.
My name's Paul Dalglish. I am the assistant coach at Real Salt Lake. I am the son of Kenny Dalglish, who you might know as a former Liverpool player and manager. As far back as I can remember, I'd always wanted to be a professional soccer player. You know, I put kind of all my attention and efforts into that. And I signed my first professional contract at 17 years of age, so I never even really finished high school. First got recognised by Liverpool when I was probably 9 or 10. Playing locally, and you know, I was always in a professional environment ever since then. So I can't really remember a time where I wanted to be anything else or had dreams to be anything else other than involved in professional soccer for the rest of my life, really. It was my hobby as well. You know, it was my hobby. It was what I did to enjoy myself. And then it was my dad's work as well. When I was off school, I used to go into Liverpool's training ground with my dad and just kick a ball about the training ground while he was training, and then we'd go home. For me, it was all I really knew was a professional football environment. One of the hardest things growing up, when you're kind of at those impressionable and insecure teenage years, when you're trying to like forge out an identity for yourself, is people coming up to you and just wanting to talk to you about your dad. You're standing there, and when you're a little bit insecure, you're thinking, well, hold on, I'm a person too. Do you want to speak to me, or do you want to speak to me about my dad? Come up and speaking to you, you know, strangers come up and speaking to you about your dad. It was, you know, it's nice when people, because my dad was kind of iconic, especially in Liverpool where I grew up. But it was also tough at times when you're kind of a little bit insecure in yourself through your teenage years, when you're trying to create an identity for yourself. And in the early years, you really ever only known as Kenny's son rather than as a person yourself. It had its benefits, but it also had its negative moments as well. You know, it was like when I was, the standard that I had to achieve was much higher than anybody else's, because my comparison was my dad. So when I first started my playing career, it was, I could play well and I could walk off the field. I could have scored a couple of goals, maybe had an assist, and people say, hey, you played really well like today, but your dad was some player. You'll never be as good as him. Even as a young player, I kind of had to deal with that expectation that people wanted to compare me to him, when in all honesty, there's probably only been Luis Suarez that's playing now that's ever come close to being as good as him, for Liverpool anyway.
I don't know. I'm wondering if there are any stories you recall from conversations you maybe had with your father where you thought about giving it up, or you thought, you know, you had doubts about yourself, or was it pretty smooth for you?
My dad actually knew the power that his name carried. He didn't want that to affect me if it was at all possible. You know, if he was coming to watch a game, he would stay away from a game. He would like stay away from where the other parents were, and would maybe park his car and watch it from afar, so it didn't put pressure on me, so people didn't know I was his son unless they knew already. And he kind of distanced himself from it to try and take the pressure off me, and also to try and make sure I was judged off my own merits rather than being judged compared to him when I was younger. So he was pretty conscious of who he was. But my dad was probably on the more critical side of after games. After he'd watched the game, he would tell me in the car, regardless of how I played, he'd say, "I don't need to tell you what you've done well because you already know that. I only need to tell you what you need to do differently because that's what you've got to improve." Sometimes that's great, because it's true that you want to learn, you want to improve, and you want to hear what you need to improve on. But sometimes you need to hear what you've done right as well. Just, you know, and the power of your dad's words telling you that telling you what you've done well is what every young son wants to hear, you know. And there was times when my dad did tell me he'd done well because he kind of told me everything that I did wrong as well. It meant a lot more when he did tell me that I'd done well.
You know, was coming over here in some way freeing for you? I mean, because you weren't immediately known, or people didn't think they immediately knew who you were because of all that?
You know, my journey to America was something that I'd wanted to do for a long time. One of the main reasons was that when I was a player in England, I was never judged off on my own merits. We'd come on vacation to America many times as a family, and it was brilliant because if we'd go to Spain or we'd go anywhere in England, we'd be constantly stopped as a family, interrupted as a family, people asking for a picture with my dad or autographs from my dad. And when we came to America, we could stand in the lines at Disney, and the only people I'd know who my dad was British people. I came to Houston and came and trained, and they offered me a contract, and luckily it was, you know, things worked out, and, you know, got on the team fairly quickly and managed to win a championship in the first year, and it was great, because some people are coming to the games in Houston didn't know who my dad was. I mean, I know a lot of them did, but some didn't, and it was kind of the first time in my life really that I was judged as me and not as Kenny Dalglish's son, and it was very freeing and very, very enjoyable for me to have the success I had as a player in America in the short time I was here, because nobody could ever tarnish it for you by saying you only achieved it because of your dad or whatever people like to say to sons of famous dads.
Paul, do you have any kids yourself?
Two. Got twins. 3-year-old twins.
Do you think they'll play soccer?
I don't care. I genuinely don't care. If they want to play, they can play. If they don't want to play, then they don't have to play. I'm not going to try and force them one way or another. Whatever they want to do, they'll work it out for themselves, and then I'll just be supremely supportive of whatever they choose, because they've got to live their life.
Yeah, perfect. Paul, is there anything that you've been thinking about after I started asking you these questions that I haven't asked you about that you think might be relevant here? Just curious.
No, not really. I mean, the The only thing I would say is that, you know, people automatically assume, like, the question I used to get asked a lot when I was younger was, how was it growing up the son of Kenny Dalglish? And people thought I was joking when I gave the answer. And I used to say, I don't know. I never knew any different. And at a young age, you don't know any different. But as you get older, people presume that it must be easier because they think that you get doors open for you. And they think that, you know, you get opportunities because of who your dad is or because of what your name is. But the truth is that some situations are easier because of your name, but some situations are much harder as well. And people don't understand the pressure and what you have to go through and people, the level that people hold you accountable to because of your surname and what your dad's achieved makes it much more difficult for you than what it makes for the average person. So, I mean, there is pros and there is cons, but people never normally understand the cons too much. They only really look at where they think the positives lie.
It's fascinating. Paul, thank you so much for the interview. This was really, really great. I think we got exactly what we need.
So it's clearly not always easy living up to the expectations that come with certain surnames. I want to take this in a slightly different direction now. When we first started thinking about this episode, the word nepotism popped up a few times. And, you know, none of us really felt like that was the right way to describe what we were talking about. You know, the soccer world is small, and if a guy can't play or if a guy can't coach, then word gets around. And then there's this. Nepotism is a bad thing, but a child seeing what his parents do and deciding, hey, I want to get involved in that, that can be a good thing. Let's double back to Robert and what he was thinking when he saw Kenny Arena that day at the U.S. practice in Florida. His first thought was nepotism.
I mean, Kenny Arena wouldn't have got this job, I deduced, if he wasn't for his father. But then I started thinking about it a little more, and it was like, Kenny's at FIU, Florida International University, and the basketball coach was the son of Rick Pitino, who, you know, is a national championship winning basketball coach at Louisville. And so he got his job from his father. And, you know, in ice hockey, like every team in the league, in the National Hockey League, has someone named Suter. Like, you know, if you're born into that family, you become a hockey player. And I was thinking about it, and it's like, it was a positive sign in a way. Like, you know, soccer is finally matured to the point where we have second generation people. Like when Bruce Arena was coming up in soccer, he was a pioneer. He was a lacrosse coach who also coached soccer. And where his son, you know, just like Michael Bradley, came up on a soccer field and was immersed in the game from the beginning. And that's a good thing, you know? Like, it's funny that my original take was nepotism and grumble grumble, but yeah, I've come to see it positively.
There are a couple other examples. Aleko Eskandarian, who played for DC United, you know, his father was Andrenik Eskandarian, who played for the Iranian national team in the World Cup and the Cosmos. Even Jurgen Klinsmann's son is a goalkeeper for the U.S. youth national teams. He lives out in California. I remember being a kid in the Mutiny locker room and playing with Roy Lassiter's toddler son, and apparently he's now a college freshman, I guess, and a really good player himself. Now, what we've spoken about so far is happening at the highest level of the game, but this idea of keeping it in the family and passing on the tradition and a passion for the sport is something, you know, that is also really important at the grassroots level. Many of us have a family member to thank for our allegiance to a soccer team or just, you know, our love for the sport itself. And it seems like we've all taken part in that family tradition, you know, being coached by your parents or, even more common, going with someone you love to that first soccer match. Now, for a lot of us, that's a really great, memorable experience, you know, going through the turnstile, your first glimpse of that green grass through the tunnel, hearing a bad word or two in the stands, eating terrible food at the concession stand. But for soccer writer and Howler Radio regular Alan Black, the experience was far from magical.
Daddy hated football. It's for the great unwashed, he said. So my uncle took me as a boy to my first football game. And he had smelly armpits and had boiled the English language down to using a single word.
Shite.
And that described much of the football I would see in years to come. We were supporting Clyde. Don't bother asking about them. No one cares. And they were playing St. Mirren, not so holy, except for their defence. A cruel and unusual frost bit the steps on which we stood. The players froze, the field rutted, the curses burned my ears. My ears were virgins. I was 10 years old, but when I was 9, I had said a bad word, tit, and my mum had threatened to wash my mouth out with soap and water. It ended my budding interest in ornithology. Look it up. But here, at this frigid sporting event, I was terrified to hear the crowds crowing and quacking, sounds that could have confused Catholics into thinking an exorcism was needed because men were speaking in tongues. What are they saying? I said to Uncle.
Shite,
he said. Clyde played in white, and like Protestants on a Reformation binge, they slaughtered St. Mirren. It was my first lesson in Christian ethics. I felt sorry for them and asked my uncle if Clyde would stop hurting St. Mirren and let them score one goal to make it fair so that they wouldn't go home crying and hate football like my dad, who liked using fragrant soap.
Don't talk shite,
said Uncle, opening up his vocabulary to two more words. Clyde hammered more nails into the saints than Jesus got at the crucifixion. It was then that I knew that football was about one thing and one thing only. No mercy.
Our ever upbeat Scotsman there. We're getting near the end of the show, and now I think the best way to wrap this up is to go back to the start and Robert Andrew Powell, who stood there looking at Kenny Arena on a training field at FIU.
I had never heard of Kenny Arena. I didn't know who Kenny Arena was, but that immediately, like, the light bulb above my head was illuminated. Like, that's Arena. Bruce Arena. He looks exactly like Bruce Arena, the former coach of the U.S. men's national team.
That's a moment that, I guess, crystallizes how far the game has come in this country. We're now seeing the children of men who made an impact in MLS when the league first started, guys like Kenny Arena and Michael Bradley. They're part of a legacy, and for me it's almost reassuring to see these surnames and think, man, we're passing this thing on to future generations. We're keeping it alive. I just want to do a quick catch-up on Kenny Arena as well. In two seasons at FIU, Kenny posted some pretty mediocre numbers. 14 wins, 18 losses, 3 draws. Late last year, Kenny left FIU to take a job as an assistant coach for the LA Galaxy. Of course, the Galaxy are coached and general managed by Bruce Arena, Kenny's father. When the appointment was announced, Bruce said that he was recruiting a good coach who just happened to be his son.
Thank you.
I want to thank everyone who helped out with this episode. Robert Andrew Powell kicked off the show. He has a new book out. It's called Running Away. And if you haven't already read his insanely good book about soccer, it's called This Love Is Not for Cowards. Well, then I have no hope for you. Paul Dalgleish told us what it's like to follow in the footsteps of a famous footballing father. You can find him on Twitter. His handle is @PaulDalgleish. Alan Black shared some pretty traumatic first match memories with us. If you want more from Alan, check out his weekly column over at the San Francisco Chronicle. You can also find him on Twitter @FootyHeader. And he has a great essay about walking to Celtic Park as a kid in 1980s Glasgow in the next issue of Howler. Howler Radio is produced by Matthew Nelson. He was assisted on this episode by Ryan Catanese. I want to give a huge shout out to our new sponsor, Roughneck Scarves. It's their support that helps us make stories like this one. And if you like this show and you want to help us make it, check out their website. That's Roughneck, spelled R-U-F-F, neck, scarves. Choose yourself a scarf and enter the promo code Howler to get a special discount. But before we go, I've got one last recording I want to use to play us out. I have to admit that until now, this episode has been missing something kind of big. When we first started making it, we put out a blast on Twitter asking for footballing fathers and sons to tell us their stories. Then we got an email from this woman, Karina Ibarra, and she was like, hey, what about the moms? And she was totally right. There are a lot of moms out there who love the game and are responsible for getting their children involved. Karina told us this incredible story about how she actually went into labor with her first child after Landon Donovan's last-minute goal against Algeria at the 2010 World Cup. And in homage to that strike, she named her son Alexander Landon Ibarra. She actually wanted to call him Lionel Donovan Ibarra, but her husband vetoed that one. Anyway, take it away, Ibarra family.
What's your name?
Alexander Donovan Ibarra.
Like who?
Like Landon Donovan.
When were you almost born?
USA against Argentina.
Who does mommy love?
Landon Donovan.
What do mommy, daddy, and Alex like to do together?
Play soccer.
This episode of Howler Radio is brought to you by Roughneck Scarves. They offer custom soccer scarves for any level, as well as individual scarves of your favorite club. Roughneck is the official scarf provider to the MLS, USL, and dozens of other leagues and clubs around the world. All Howler Radio listeners receive an exclusive discount on their orders by using promo code Howler. Visit roughneckscarves.com for more information. Better service, better designs, better scarves.